Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our study of the book of Proverbs. We are currently in chapter 4. But first, this important personal message. Embedded in every blessing is a burden. For me, it's an enormous blessing to share God's Word with you. But with that blessing, as you might imagine, comes the heavy burden of funding this radio broadcast ministry. If you're able to lift some of this burden, the announcer will tell you at the end of the program our contact information and how you can partner with us in maintaining this broadcast. In chapter 4, verse 1, we have another of many appeals by a wise father to treasure wisdom above all. Notice the generational heritage. Here is a life lesson, for we are reminded by this example that a legacy of wisdom or folly tends to be passed from one generation to another. Wise living, friends, tends to commend itself to the next generation, and folly today tends to imprint its habits upon its successors. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you, I impart to you, sound teaching, good teaching. Do not abandon my instruction, he appeals. For when I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he, my father, taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words and keep my commandments and live. Son, acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget, nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, wisdom, and she, wisdom, will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, and with all of your acquiring, get understanding, Hebrew parallelism. Prize her, wisdom, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a garland of grace, and she will present you with a crown of beauty. Note in verse 3 the role of the father in the inculcation of wisdom. Mothers can be great teachers in the rearing of children, to be sure. Throughout history, some of the great men of God, the great church father Chrysostom and also Augustine, come immediately to mind. They were noted for their outstanding mothers. However, the transmission of wisdom, especially with sons, often breaks down in the absence of an attentive and caring father in the equation to complement the work of a good and wise mother. Children don't always have both, but in God's plan, they need both. A man can have many mentors, but none compares to a wise father whom a son respects. I have seen many godly mothers in my lifetimes lose their sons to the world because of a disengaged dad who was emotionally, if not physically, absent much of the time, or whose own attachment, the father I mean, to wisdom and the embrace of the truth was discernibly tepid. In the end, the son followed the passive mentoring of the father. By the way, let me emphasize again that the redundancy that we see in some of these wisdom appeals in Proverbs is quite deliberate. It is not haphazard. They say that possession is nine-tenths of the law. Likewise, repetition is nine-tenths of conviction. Repetition of this kind imprints the consciousness so that these thoughts may remain on the frontal lobe, tattoo themselves to the consciousness. The father reminds his son that wisdom will guard you. The possession of wisdom is a source of security. Make wisdom an aggressive priority in all of your lives. Make wisdom an aggressive priority in all of your pursuits. And Solomon says, she will guard you. Acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding, verse 5. Do not forget. Do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her. She will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. Wisdom has a way, when it imbues the mind, of steering us away from traps that catch many like birds in a net. Wisdom will keep her lover from bad influences and bad companions who get people into trouble. How many times do we hear a mother or father say, sadly, of a wayward son, "Well, Johnny was a good boy, but he just got in with a bad crowd." If I've heard that once, I've heard it at least 1,000 times in my lifetime. Well, a son or daughter pursuing wisdom is always headed in the opposite direction of those pursuing folly. We parents just have to devote ourselves to inculcating wisdom. If we don't do that, how do we expect our children to develop an appetite for wisdom and for understanding? I certainly have that advantage in my home. I didn't always want to hear it, but whether my parents knew it or not, I never failed to listen. And eventually, it got hold of me. It got hold of me to such an extent that all of my life I've always been enamored with people who are discernibly wise. I want to talk with them. I want to listen to them because they are like God-given guidelines. They're like compasses in the night. In verses 7 through 9, Solomon tells us that wisdom will promote us in life. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, and with all of your acquiring, get understanding. Take it to the front of the food chain. You may get houses, you may get land, you may get cars. You may be rich in stocks and bonds and whatever. You may be rich in children. But the first thing that you should set your affection on and make as your goal is to acquire wisdom and to acquire godly understanding. Prize her, she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. Wise people, like cream, tend to rise to the top, if not in social or business or political terms, at least in terms of esteem. You can have all the brains in the world. You can have an out-of-this-world IQ. But if in the end your associates do not respect you and think you're some kind of geek who doesn't have an ounce of common sense, much less higher sense, it can only take one so far. Wisdom, Solomon says, will enhance you. It is that X factor. It is that extra something that adds a winsomeness and a wholesomeness that good people admire. Folly will slam you. Wisdom will make you shine and stand out from the crowd, for there is so little of it. It's a word that in our day we seldom hear even mentioned. Once in a while somebody does, and I'm always surprised. Because the exception proves the rule. We talk about knowledge, we talk about learning, but we don't talk about wisdom. And even if people did talk about it, they would not be talking generally about the kind of wisdom that the Proverbs is talking about. Now this brings us to Proverbs chapter 4, verses 10 through 19, where Solomon imparts wisdom about the temptation trap. Many a man has gone down this path, and many a man has wrecked himself, wrecked his family, wrecked his health, and in fact, even found death at the end of the trail. Hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded, and if you run, you will not stumble. Remember, all of these tend to be general observations of the way things usually work in God's moral order. Take hold of instruction and do not let go. Godly instruction, guard her, for she is your life. Do not enter into the path of the wicked. Do not proceed in the way of evil men. Don't even think of going there. Avoid it, pass by it, turn away from it, and pass on. For such cannot sleep unless they do evil, and they are robbed of sleep unless they make someone stumble. For they eat the bread of wickedness. That's what they feed on. They drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They don't even know over what it is. They stumble. They're clueless. Temptation traps can come in many different ways. It's not always wine, women, pride, and money. Sometimes it can be more subtle. I remember when I was teaching back in the 1970s at a Bible college in the Denver area. There came a day later in my tenure there when I was invited to be the academic dean. That involved a temptation. While there were many reasons I might have liked to have been dean, some of them just simply prideful and others of them strategic, at the end of the day, I knew very well that I belonged in the classroom, not making out schedules and helping with catalogs and doing all of this accreditation busy work. I would have liked the privilege of hiring in faculty, that sort of thing. But that was only 25% of the job. The other 75% of the job I would have hated, and all I would have had was a big fat title and something that looked good on my resume. But I belonged in the classroom. Through a series of circumstances, I figured that out. And that was the wise choice, and that's where I stayed. I was once pursued as a pastor very early on in my career to go to a church in another area of my native state. And the big lure was financial incentives, a new car and double the salary that I was getting. Now, any person who is a friend of wisdom would know that that was not a godly lure, and know that the people offering it were not people who were really open to the wisdom of God. As much as it might have appealed to me, just 2 years out of seminary, to go to a church that was much larger than my small church, and to have a new car and to have double the meager salary that I had, I knew right away this was a temptation trap, and I did not go there. I remember when I was just a paper boy back in high school, one of the homes to which I delivered the paper was a young woman who was more mature than most high school girls, physically at least. She was what the guys would call a bomb. Today they would say she was real hot. And I remember on a couple of occasions she tried to make a move on me. She'd make a move on almost anybody. I was nothing special. But she came to the door when I came to collect, very skimpily dressed. Quite sensational, I must say. But right there was a lure. Without saying a word, it was an invitation, come on in, which I did not do. The wisdom of my parents had taught me and put a guardrail up, but it was a temptation for a young man of 17 years old with boiling hormones. We are tempted any time we experience an internal solicitation to do evil, to transgress God's moral laws. Whenever something inside coaxes us to drift out of God's boundaries, plies us with inducement to gratify our flesh, our pride, rather than to conform to the Spirit of God, any time we find ourselves wavering between two opinions, one in favor of infringing our conscience and the other begging us to obey God, whenever we find ourselves caught between the pull of the world and the tug of the Word of God in the morally opposite direction, that's when we're in the throes of temptation. In short, temptation is a solicitation to do evil, and that's what this patch of Proverbs is warning us about. Temptation itself is not a sin, but it is driven by the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. James says one is tempted when he's carried about and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. James says, chapter 1, verses 14 through 16. So temptation is not something to be trivialized as some light thing, as people so often do today. Temptation is the narthex of all human miseries. It is sin's handmaid. It introduces to the soul the raucous, dinning voice of guilt and every evil thing which drives us to distraction and dysfunction. Unless we learn to respect the danger that temptation presents, and that's what Solomon is trying to do here. And unless we take preemptive action, sin with all of its ruinous effects will be all over us like white on rice. So here Solomon offers wise words about coping with temptation. The first of which is this: stay anchored. Hear, my son, and accept my sayings. The years of your life will be many. I've directed you in the way of wisdom, the revealed ways of God. I've led you in upright paths. When you walk, if you do what I say, your steps will not be impeded. And if you run, when you're more at risk, you will not stumble, as does one who wrecks himself on the reefs of temptation. So take hold of instruction. That is instruction about God's ways, God's will, God's commandments. Do not let go of her. Guard her, for she is your life. That is, your stay and support in anything worthy of the name. A ship at anchor is not going to drift into a reef and damage its hull or get stuck on a sandbar. Stay anchored how? In the Word. To overcome temptation, we need at all times to stay anchored in the Word. There is the reservoir of God's wisdom for us. The wisdom of God is an anchor. When storms of temptation descend on us, tossing us in seas of doubt and uncertainty, and pushing us under the stress and strains of a moment or a place in time to take actions or consent to directions that are to God inimical to our own best interest and hostile to His holiness. What the preacher in Proverbs is talking about resonates with the answer that the psalmist David gave to his own moral question in 119, 9, 11, 15, and 16. How can a young man keep his way pure? David answers, by keeping it according to thy word. There's the answer. There's the hedge against the temptation trap. Thy word I have treasured in my heart that I might not sin against thee. I will meditate on thy precepts. I will regard thy ways. I shall delight in thy statutes. I will not forget thy word. That's how we stay anchored. First of all, we stay in the word. You show me a Christian, so-called, who spends little time in the word, and I will show you a Christian who is ripe for the picking temptation-wise. Folks, we don't perceive our own weaknesses. Jesus told his disciples, "Oh, I know the spirit is willing, but your flesh is weak." We don't see the fractures in our spiritual walls under the pressure, and stress hits us like a thunderbolt. Suddenly the rivets of convictions loosen, the walls of resistance weaken, and we give way before the onslaught of temptation, timed and wickedly calculated to perfection by our gleeful enemy, who enjoys nothing more than leveraging a believer into the ways that belie his confession. A second way to stay anchored is to be in prayer. Of course, our text says nothing explicitly about prayer, does it? But it does exhort the learner in verse 5 to acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. One way of pursuing those, as James reminds the man who finds himself in a quandary, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. Asking of God, that is prayer. In the Word of God, friends, is a treasury of wisdom and knowledge, which will steer us clear of 1,000 or more potholes that will throw our lives out of alignment with God and blow out our tires. Through prayer, the Spirit of God illuminates the Word, helps us understand what He is saying to us in the Word, and facilitates the wise application of its principles and precepts to the vagaries and vicissitudes of modern life. So the first thing is stay anchored in the Word and in prayer. That's one of the great hedges against temptation. Here's another. Stand clear. What do I mean by stand clear? Well, listen to verses 14 and 15. Do not enter into the path of the wicked. Don't park there. Do not proceed in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it and pass on. Do not turn to the right or the left, verse 27 of this chapter will tell us. Turn your feet from evil. The best advice in dealing with temptation, it's preventive maintenance. We put ourselves in compromising situations. We have a habit of doing that. We make provision for the flesh. We give temptation a running start on us. And then, stupidly, we get mowed down. We make the mistake of putting ourselves in the path of temptation and bringing it on us. Obviously, if you're an alcoholic, a good place to not visit is a beer hall. We all know that. If you're trying to break the habit of smoking, let's say, then don't carry around a pack of cigarettes. If your hormones are running hot and heavy, then don't walk down a red light district. I mean, you understand what I mean? If you have problem gambling, then don't go around a casino. So what I'm saying, when I say stand clear, what Solomon is saying, I'm saying it in different words, don't go to temptation. I call that teasing the dog. If you have a romantic involvement, don't just put yourself in circumstances where the flesh gets a jump start on your hormones. Keep some guardrails between you and sexual temptation. If you have trouble keeping your lid on, don't walk into a situation that you know in advance is likely to raise your temperature. When I say stand clear, don't bring it to you. Don't go buying trouble. I've quoted this a couple of times already in this study. Proverbs 6, 27 through 28. Can a man take fire into his bosom and his clothes not get burned? Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not get scorched? When I was teaching in Bible college, I mentioned back in the 70s, we didn't have the best office situations in the world. But I made it a habit since I somehow, by default, became the prime counselor on campus. And since young women are far more voluble and willing to talk and share their feelings than guys, I would have 2-to-1 girls in my office. Well, I just learned that I shouldn't close my office door. I'd always leave it cracked, and I would tell the young gals, look, that's good for you and that's good for me. And I had seen a couple of occasions where that proved very wise. In our church offices, when we built them here, we put windows in all the doors. That doesn't prevent problems, but it just puts one more layer of preventive maintenance between us and problems. You've got to watch what you allow into your home, films, magazines, videos, cable movies. You've got to watch what you expose yourself to through some of these media. You just can't sit at home and not buy trouble if you do not have the discipline to use that clicker. Another way to avoid temptation is to be alert. Watch over your heart with all diligence, 4:23 says, for from it flow the springs of life. I mean, this is critical. Your heart is going to direct the channels of your whole life. So watch over your heart with all diligence. Watch what you feed it. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Don't just take them for granted. If you're not watching, you can really stumble. So be alert about what's looking for you. Watch out for opportunity. Put that in quotes, because opportunity is often just temptation by another name. Opportunity, not infrequently, is the devil's bait to take you off center and out of play. For example, beware of new job or business opportunities that demand so much of you that they put you on the shelf spiritually. And beware, for example, of budding relationships, social or romantic, that threaten your spiritual and moral health. And beware of offenses, real or imagined, that are the breeding ground for roots of bitterness in your heart. Be alert about what's looking for you, and be alert about what you are looking for. Beware of putting secondary things first, like looking for a mate to quench your loneliness. People who put Christ second to find what is secondary will almost invariably find their own kind to their detriment, and then they'll wonder what happened. Beware of putting what you think are your emotional needs ahead of your spiritual needs. The best way, friends, to defeat temptation is to anticipate it and make up your mind what you're going to do before you face it. More battles with temptation are won by fixing the decision in advance than by honest debate at the time. Finally, I would say, be warned. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner, stranger? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. The Bible tells us that his own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. Proverbs 5:22. Don't forget about accountability, and for heaven's sakes, don't forget about baggage. Be warned. Well, thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.